Well, I wish I could say that I was not disappointed in the media, who continue to portray their hypocritical desire for worship, self-deification, plugged-in ignorance role. They are so desperate to prove that they were not wrong in terrorizing the American public, and since this will play in reruns with the program that's been rolling around the clock, and most of you will want to check in with the news in spite of the remarks that I'm going to make, you'll get your chances on the half hour. But this is Thursday night, West Coast time, our regular live time period. And with you, I have watched with concern, with horror over some of the things I'm going to comment about, with what one father said who saw his own son being interviewed, one of the pilots of the jets flying the missions, and commented so eloquently that his reactions were a mixture of fear and pride, and then on occasions, in his case, the pride would outweigh the fear, but in the mother's case, the fear would outweigh the pride, because to her, he would always be her little boy. I think the majority of America, as the current polls are indicating, share that kind of emotion. Pride at the obvious courage and quality of those that are doing the job as they are interviewed. And in my case, the satisfaction to see the media have to eat the crap that they've been peddling, that is flung back in their face in spite of their desperation and need to be proved omniscient in their pursuit of omnipotence, those God-like qualities that makes them, because God does have those qualities, resent so much anyone who represents the God they don't believe in. In every case, they try to play down the lack of resistance as some cat-and-mouse game, as something mysterious, as something other than the sheer fact that for the first time we've had a president willing to unleash the military to fight the war the way they want to fight it, without a hand tied behind their back. And we are seeing American power demonstrated, which should produce a pride that this country, with its deep-rooted historic character, possesses that power, not the godless forces that so clamor for attention in this world. That someone who has throughout history exercised restraint and responsibility has that kind of power. The answer to the non-resistance is they just got their ass whipped. Yeah. That's for openers. And today it continued, probably approaching 2,000 sorties as the daylight progresses 12 hours ahead of us on the clock. But all of that magnificent performance with surgical precision is crowded out by the equivalent of a blip on the TV screen, about like the effect of a pigeon flying over while you were watching a television screen movie and you see a little blip for a second. 6 or 7 missiles aim for a whole country. With an 8 to a 10 mile deviation from accuracy factor in the 200 to 300 mile range that they were no doubt shot from, crowds out the surgical precision of hundreds of missiles sent 3 and 5 and 8 and 1200 miles. With the precision of a place kicker in a Super Bowl game, hitting with the precision of the space between goalposts. I heard the news team for CNN and commented to someone else that they probably will get a Pulitzer Prize and should, for their reporting in the early days of the bombardment, or the early hours of the bombardment on Baghdad. Having been in situations where I've spent more than 30 hours on my feet a few times in my life, I know the way you can get lightheaded and somewhat giddy. And at the same time, I would not really hold it against them if they kept their nerve and courage and endurance up with a few drinks now and then. I do think that toward the end of their reporting, either through exhaustion or something else, that keen edge began to go, and they got a little blabbermouthed and maudlin and repetitive, until that fine and wonderful quality reporting that brought the attention of the world for their courage had to be tainted with a little ass-kissing at the end, as one began to ask the question why Saddam would let them stay there and continue to report. And it turned into a kind of emotional attempt to give us a new view of this man, as though maybe he's been misjudged by the world. Thuggery and murder can be dismissed in an instant because he allows 3 reporters to stay in a hotel. That fool probably hoped and prayed they'd be killed so he could parade them. That fool never dreamed that we could hit with the precision that our men hit with. He fully expected to be able to parade dead in mosque-toppled minarets as they were slaughtered with blood on their prayer rugs. He fully expected to lay out children in the streets, innocent citizens, that he might parade and use these very news people who would have reported it, making no distinction between propaganda and factual reporting. Never have we fought an enemy in our life, not even Vietnam, where a ready-made worldwide propaganda instrument is made available to faithfully report even that which they know is a bald-faced lie, such as how many planes they claim to have shot down when their own reporters are sitting there counting them when they come back and talking to the pilots who flew. find, either tired or whatever, dropping their guard in that same loss of restraint toward the end of their reporting. And I'm not sure that any person with flesh and blood could do otherwise. I think these were reporters pushed to the end of human endurance. And I think in the fatigue of the moment or whatever it might have been, that tendency we have seen in the media to pay any price of fawning and posturing to continue to have the opportunity of this evil man and his cohorts giving them a chance to gain the scoop began to take over. As they would place some kind of complimentary reason on his leaving them there. However, the good side also came out. When one of them says, I'll probably get in trouble for this, but I don't care if I do, and reported an anti-aircraft and radar placement just outside his window. And when the first strike did not provide the propaganda machine material that Saddam wanted, he promptly shut him up, so much for his generous desire that the public might know the truth, even if it hurts him. And today, with our brave men and women performing this job with precision unequaled in history, as they've hit the precise targets again and again, beyond the highest expectations of the military planners who had not tried some of the sophisticated weaponry in actual war, they take a little glitch. Terrible as the motive may have been, it was expected, of 8 miserable, poorly aimed missiles shot like a shotgun toward a major population area 200 miles away into Tel Aviv and make it the big news story of the day. They have become a propaganda machine, blindly pursuing their own ego, no matter what the cost to the American public or the future of the world. Those 8 missiles should have been belittled for what they were. Let the Israelis give what is a genuine, heartfelt, justifiable response, that they are the only country other than Kuwait whose citizens have had to suffer now this madman's unprincipled attacks. They give more news to those 8 missiles, which is exactly what Saddam wanted to achieve, tactically, in terms of damage, in terms of genuine threat to Israel. Those 8 to maybe 10 missiles, they don't know how many missed and dropped in the Mediterranean yet, are given more notoriety than almost 2,000 surgical strikes against Iraq. And those 8 miserable shots that at best could only, without any depreciation of how terrible it is to those few, 6 to 10 people, hurt but not seriously. Just think about it. The vaunted missile power of Iraq, in 24 hours, shooting to an entire nation trying to find people wherever they can hit them, in a major populated area, 200 miles can drop one in a city and injure 6 to 8 people. And that gets more play in the news than their attempt to shoot the same Scud missile to Eastern Arabia and the very first use in battle of the Patriot missile shoots the damn thing down for all to behold. Israel had Patriot missiles. Not activated is probably the best report that's come over the wires so far, because they received some of the Star Wars money to try to perfect an arrow missile that was a little less confined in the arc of its aim. But on the other side, the Patriot missile was proven. But that's sort of, you know, a subsidiary story. All attention is on Israel. Now, I could live with all that attention on Israel if, instead of worrying about Israel getting in the war, which, as a member of the United Nations, they have every right to do. I mean, what is it? This is a non-issue, made an issue by the media. Syria has its own reasons for being in the alliance. It just happens to hate Saddam more than it hates Israel. He knows Israel won't try to take him over. He knows Saddam will. And if he's lost, who gives a hoot about his 5,000 miserable troops? He ain't going to fight anybody. Every time he tried to fight Israel, he got whipped. Plus, Israel could level him in Iraq if it turns all of its planes loose. Instead of emphasizing that issue, why is the media not reacting in horror to this unprovoked attack on an obviously neutral party committed not to participate before the whole world willingly standing there and saying, we'll absorb the first blow? And whether or not one of the missiles proves to be bearing chemical weapons or not, if it was not, it's because the U.S. and the Allied Air Force wiped out their fixed launch missiles, which had the capacity to carry the chemical warload. And John McCarthy stands in Washington and says with a somber voice that the Israelis must now be very sure that if they had done it, they could have wiped out the threat of those missiles better than the United States. Hogwash. They'd have had Iraq's Air Force to contend with and all of the other things that the U.S. wiped out in the process of wiping out the fixed missile sites that were the major threat that could have carried with more accuracy a chemical warhead into Israel. America must be belittled. If we win, it's because we're up against a laydown. That's the media. The only thing that they have said in recent days that's truthful is they don't understand Saddam. That is truthful. And the morality of these protest people is pretty obvious, too. They're against violence. So they beat on cops' heads and turned cops' cars over and set them on fire. And they have high principles. They are unmoved by an unprincipled, unprovoked attack of random shots of missiles on innocent civilians in populated areas. And the media cannot use its powerful voice to educate the world. The whole world is watching this. There is no place in the world that is not watching CNN, including the other networks and the leaders on both sides. And they have a chance to stand firm on certain, never-changing principles of a civilized world. And they don't have the guts to do it. Indeed, don't have the character themselves to recognize it. The whole civilized world is against the use of chemical weaponry. Even as a psychological weapon. I'm so sick and tired of the same media that pours into the home blood and carnage every night, now getting sentimental about the possible psychological effects on our children of this war, as if a mom and dad can't say we're over there whipping the ass of the devil. But how much sympathy did you feel coming out of the media tonight for the innocent kids in Israel putting gas masks on and taking them off and listening to the air raid alarms? I mean, if it's a genuine felt concern they have, it'll be consistent. This evil man and Israel has as much right to exist as those other nations. Nobody's arguing about the Palestinians having a problem. They got the problem the Jews had before Israel was created. And don't give me the crap about that being their homeland. I'm a history major. Palestinians were moved in there just like the Jews were. Now they've been moved out, and that's tragic. But it doesn't go back to Adam, my friend, their geography and claim. And there has been an agreement of the world community to look at that problem. And understandably, the Palestinians have a biased view. So how come the news media is always going to give us a man talking on a telephone out of Amman, Jordan, seedbed of the Palestinian movement? How come they haven't got one in Damascus telling us how the Arabs feel? How come they haven't got one down in Saudi Arabia telling us how the Arabs feel? There's a whole series of Gulf states that are Arabs. How come they don't have somebody in each one of those cities giving us a reading on what the Arabs think? They've already joined forces with Saddam Hussein. The only people that get the designation Arab are those that agree with Saddam. There are a lot of Arabs who don't agree with Saddam, including the ones that ask us to come over there and kick him out. Yeah. They're always talking about, you know, the great percentage, too large a percentage of the soldiers are black and Latin and poor. I sort of counted the faces flying those planes who were taking the real risks. Did you? I saw a few honky pilots. They looked to me like they were outnumbered. Tell me who's taking the risks. Guy cranks up the bombs, nooks them on, or the guy that's out there flying through the flak? And oh, the coverage they give us of these eight miserable Scud missiles that could only find six people in a whole nation. I mean, that's real powerful missile warfare. You kill one per missile. Most powerful weapon in the world kills one. Right in the center of a populated metropolis, each missile, the average is one per missile. At that rate, he's got 500 missiles. We know the risk. We can factor those. I can add those numbers up pretty easy. I mean, let's figure that out. The man is an evil reincarnation of Adolf Hitler. Anybody that knows their history, has to ask themselves, could Hitler have surrendered and survived? No. He had boxed himself in where it was win or die. Quit expecting Saddam to be any different if you've studied his history. He's a megalomaniac, insane fanatic. Treat him accordingly. Got to be annihilated. Turn his bunkers into parking lots. But here we are. All they can do all day long, make a big deal out of eight Scud missiles shot 200 to 300 miles into the major metropolis of the Mediterranean coast. And they injure six. They didn't kill them. Wait a minute, I overstated their ability. Injure one per missile. And not a serious injury at that. Don't get euphoric. Why not? 1,500 planes fly and you lose one? Each? From three nations? And one of those was an engine failure. The pilots bailed out. Now, I'm only half done. The media has overplayed what is nothing but a blip on the screen in the total video of the last, now going into the second day of war. Over 2,000 sorties by now. Precision bombing unmatched in the history of mankind. The delayed films that have come out of Baghdad, which is part of that for which the journalists in Baghdad can be commended for. That played toward the end of the day on the news today, give you some picture of what was going on in Baghdad and the rocket's red glare compared to eight puny missiles shot over a 200 to 300 mile space into the heart of populated civilian cities, and the best they can do is 6 to 8 to 10, one per missile injured slightly. We may still find that one of them had a chemical warhead, and the only reason we won't find one with a chemical warhead is because the Allied forces wiped out the permanent Scud sites. And I'll guarantee you that every one of those mobile units that shot those missiles are finding out who the real God is with a personal introduction right now, somewhere other than on this earth. The media has, it seems, an inability to make the transition in responsibility that Congress made. There was a time to debate. There was a time to discuss. And then, because of the moral issues involved, a time to take a stand. Because they've nominated themselves as the God of this whole world, they keep trying to present some balanced view between poison and clean water, between the civilized and the uncivilized. And they give credence to the remarks of the uncivilized who use lying as a method they have deliberately adopted, and critically attack those who have been brought up in a culture that places some premium on truth. They border on the traitor. I sat and had to ask the moral question, as without blanching or even having an embarrassed look on their face, a self-righteous anchor who spent a year attacking the slightest deviation of anyone who mentioned the name of God on television for more than a year, sits right there in his self-righteous, self-proclaimed worship and pursuit of truth, and doesn't even blanch while one of his remote pickup people in Israel says, "What is your source?" He said, "My source is a confidant of a high military figure in the Israeli army." Now, the morality of this is that high military figure in the Israeli army committed treason to share that information with his confidant, and that confidant passed that treasonous information to the U.S. news commentator, who, without blanching or portraying the slightest exhibition of respect for truth and honesty, passes it on to the anchor, who also doesn't register the slightest moral perception of the example being set in front of the youth of America, of failed integrity, treason to its government, breached oaths. In law, there is a principle. A poison tree drops off poison fruit. Courts of law, in theory, are not to be enforcers of unlawful contracts. If you cannot present your case without reference to the lawful act from which the events stem, then, like a drop of ink in a pure stream, the stream is tainted. The report and the eagerness to be first to report something that violated Israel's security came from the mouth of one whose conscience was so seared in his habitual scramble to be first to tell something, what is really the deification of the gossip. Just think about it for a moment. The media represents a deified gossip. In ancient journalism, they pursued truth. They are deified tattlers. Deified tattletalers. And petulantly, ABC's anchor, can't think of his name, he's the most suave one of the bunch. He can say million. Jennings. Petulantly complaining that the war room had promised to give them two media briefings a day, and they'd only gotten one. As they were seeking to find out through these compromised, disloyal, breach of oath, poison tree, they were seeking the poison fruit, to be able to tell the world, including Saddam Hussein and his crowd, who had just fired missiles on innocent civilians to an innocent country that had was out of this war, unprovoked, and no doubt attempted to send poison or chemical gas. They're attempting to tell him, through a compromised source, whether or not Israel is retaliating, and if so, what? With the whole world looking on, in a war that has demonstrated itself repeatedly, this doesn't have a damn thing to do with oil. It has to do with a budding Hitler in the Middle East, whose roots can be traced to Adolf Hitler and the Nazi movement, who is a follower of the ideologue who wrote his own books of the ideas of the Ba'ath Party, who got them from Mussolini and Hitler. A racist who believes that the Arabs are superior and everyone else should kneel or die. Who rose to power by thuggery, brutality, and torture that even Adolf Hitler did not have in his background. Who gassed a minority group within his country, the Kurds. Who raped and pillaged and destroyed not only the people, but the culture and permanent records and roots of a nation created at the same time he was created, his nation, by the same hands. Now, unprovoked, sends missiles. I'm sorry, it should be emphasized what a sorry job he did, but sends missiles unprovoked to kill at random innocent people, terrorize psychologically a nation, including big-eyed, innocent, terrorized children learning how to put on gas masks, Jews who have escaped from Russia getting off planes, innocent victims from Russia just landing and having to have their children taught how to put a gas mask on when they thought they were escaping. The horrors they've undergone in Soviet Russia. And the peace yellers. There's a real pun in that, the peace yellers. And the media will be not responsible enough to stand up and say, this is an evil the world cannot tolerate. What do you think these same streetwalkers would do if the United States had sent missiles at random into Yemen? What do you think this same media would do in the manner of reporting if the United States sent missiles unprovoked into Cuba? if it were reported on the evening news that we sent ballistic missiles at random into Havana because we were mad at Russia. They are evil. They no longer can just be called glitter teeth, idiot card reading ignoramuses. They are evil, who will serve themselves and their image and their desire to be right at any cost, at the expense of human decency, the ongoing progress of the world towards civilization, and their cowardice in the face of a modern Hitler. A double standard. When the ground war engages, there will be casualties, but once again, as people are finding out tonight, we had missiles, spinoffs of the Star Wars program, that could shoot down an incoming missile, the Patriot, that shot down the Scud missile heading toward Arabia. As the world has seen, the effectiveness of the Allies, particularly the United States and Britain's air power, when the ground war engages, it will be equally surprising. They'll flood the trenches with oil and set them on fire, and our tanks will have the equipment to see through the smoke, and they won't. The same sophisticated ability to move at night exists, and the same superiority of arms will demonstrate itself in spite of the casualties at that level too. And this is not Armageddon. And if Israel decides to get involved, it will not cause the alliance to come apart. And if terrorism develops, maybe then and only then the civilized world, when it begins to feel it all over the world, will get mad enough to wipe out the centers of terrorism and go ahead and do in Libya and Syria and Tunisia at the same time. And that little checkerboard head coward called Arafat, you know, I don't know which way I want to treat it, airhead or fathead, who has proven himself a coward nonstop. He fled when Syria was in trouble. You notice he's not in Baghdad. The Palestinians need a home, and that'll be dealt with just as the Jews needed a home. And that was ultimately dealt with by the civilized people of the world. But the issue now is a racist who, if he is not stopped with his ability to incite religious and racist prejudice to support his uncivilized ways, no two forces out of control or more dangerous than a religious fanatic or a racist. Now, he is both a religious fanatic who is a racist, and that evil must be stopped. And the media, with a chance to appeal to a civilized world for the principles that are involved, a media that cannot see the difference between those programmed ignoramuses jumping up and down in the streets, both the peace yellers here and the staged exhibitions in Jordan and in Iraq, and can't see the difference between those people and the reasoned character demonstration quality of the servicemen that are carrying out this distasteful task in the interest of a free world and one that is civilized. They're not worthy to be seen in your living room. That these men can sit there and in the name of some kind of warped pursuit of truth, which is nothing but a rationale for their megalomaniac desire to dominate your mind and be number one in your view, have lost all sense of decency that requires a transition that was made in the Second World War. The journalists of the Second World War, who lasted and endured in the years that followed, gained the ability to make the transition between the Allied forces and the Axis. They gained the ability to see the difference between the treatment of occupied people and the rapage and brutality of the Nazi stormtroopers in their conquered areas, and the raping and the pillage of the Japanese warlords as they gobbled up Southeast Asia. They gained the ability to see the difference between a conquering stormtrooper and a Japanese warlord and Bob Michaels in our Congress, who wept as he told the story of taking some German boys prisoners and seeing their face light up when they found out he wasn't going to shoot them. They didn't gain the ability in the Vietnam War to see the difference between those that would put prisoners in bamboo cages, subjected to water rats and every other kind of torture, versus the common decency of our boys that were over there dying and being maimed. Not since the Second World War have we had journalism with the character to take sides when an issue of civilization and human decency on which the world depends is at stake. You say, what can I do? Write the president. Tell him there's at least one preacher that wouldn't stand there with a weak-kneed message as Billy Graham did and say a great tragedy has hit the earth. No, a great tragedy hasn't hit the earth any more than a bug eradicator is a tragedy when they come to your house and bore some holes to get rid of the termites and put the poison in. A great and wonderful thing has happened. We finally have a president with the guts to stand up and fight for principle. You never know, one letter can make the difference. I'm not praying for peace. I'm praying for courage and faith to obliterate the enemy until peace is a natural process. We don't have to prove that we're peacemakers any longer. We don't have to prove any longer we want peace. The only way you're going to have peace is remove the ones that don't want it. You don't make peace with them to have peace. You get a peace and blow them away. Now, I have one little footnote. Not only did I notice that there were a few white guys flying those planes, taking the risks. I haven't heard the media complain once. We have only one chief of staff in charge of all the military might of this country. When you got only one, the guy who occupies that is 100% of the options. So they're complaining about the percentage of blacks in the Army, yet I heard one complaint. About 100% of the top leadership is black. And doing a damn good job, too. And he sure puts to rest some of these old white racist issues about skin affecting your ability. I mean, I wish we could get out. See, I got a... Yeah. It was Doc's ass beater. I wish I had... Look, can't you... Oh, a camera here. Where's the camera? Yeah, here it is. I wish I had a black one shaped like Colin Powell with his face on it that I could just beat on racists with. The media is a hypocrite. And you fight every war as though you're the only soldier getting out of the foxhole. That goes for the ones that are home and expressing their support. You get your pencil and you get your paper out and you get your pen, you get your typewriter, you get your word processor, whatever you use. And you write letters to the president and tell him that the only thing that makes us once in a while have to bleed about freedom is the knowledge that the price of freedom is association with nuts. And the media and the street yellers represent those nuts. But what freedom really produces at its best is exhibited in the leadership that's been given and in those that are finally restoring the world to an understanding among all the naysayers who have said America's lost its power. There is only one truly great power in the world, and thank God they still have a sense of decency and are willing to stand up against a self-appointed replacement for that power, mad-ass Saddam. Spell his name backwards while you're scribbling someday. Get on the telephone. Racism and religious fanaticism is what we're up against. By an unprincipled, uncivilized, unconscionable fascist. I have more to say, but I want you to finish your phone call, so give me another song. Don't take any more calls. Everybody should read The Republic of Fear. The Politics of Modern Iraq. You also should get a hold of the book The Rape of Kuwait. And I've been reading this week Saddam Hussein and the crises in the Gulf. I don't know why my cameraman's taken so long to go do a very brief assignment. I wish he'd get back in here. Human rights in Iraq. Media's really been on the side of human rights. Remember that? That's one of their big deals. When he was released on October 18, 1983, reading from Saddam Hussein, The Crisis in the Gulf, when he was released on October 18, 1983, after being held for 110 days in a Baghdad security prison without ever having been charged, Robert Sperling told U.S. diplomats that his treatment at the hands of his Iraqi jailers was nothing compared to that meted out to Iraqis and other Arabs he saw there. What's the matter with the media telling the truth, that they have just raped and pillaged a fellow Arab country, instead of letting a journalist in Amman that they won't let out of his hotel tell him what Arabs think? Sperling, a U.S. citizen, was then 50 and the technical director of the luxury Baghdad Novotel Hotel. Now, this is reprinted from Human Rights in Iraq by Middle East Watch, published by Human Rights Watch, Yale University Press, November 1990. He was on the point of boarding a flight to Paris on the night of June 29th to 30th, 1983, together with his Belgian wife and children, when he simply disappeared. Unbeknown to his family, he had been deftly diverted down a ramp where security agents in a car awaited him. Mrs. Sperling frantically sought the assistance of U.S. diplomatic representatives in Baghdad. More than a week passed before Iraqi authorities answered their inquiries and acknowledged that Sperling was being held. They never explained why he was detained. Sperling later told U.S. officials that he was abducted, blindfolded, and driven to what he assumed to be the headquarters of the Baghdad security forces, put together personally by Saddam, by the way. There he was interrogated and tortured repeatedly, pressed first to confess to spying, and later simply give information on others. On July 6th and 23rd, he later testified, "I was given blows with a rubber truncheon on the soles of my feet. Electric shocks were applied to my hands, feet, kidney region, genitals, and above all to my ears. Blows with the forearm to my head, four blows with a rubber hose on the upper part of my feet, two blows to the ears with boot heels, blows to the ears with cushions resembling boxing gloves, and violent slaps." Sperling was threatened with mutilation and was told that his wife and children had been arrested and would be mistreated unless he cooperated. This was untrue. Mrs. Sperling remained in Baghdad throughout her husband's detention. And while Iraqi authorities encouraged her to leave, they did not harass her. Sperling was fed half portions for a time and then fed irregularly. On several occasions, he was given spoiled and heavily salted food to induce nausea and thirst. More fortunate than most, he was given a cell to himself, which he shared only briefly with an Iraqi political prisoner. But the cell had an external temperature control which enabled his jailers alternately to make it very hot or very cold. And time after time, he said, "I had to listen to the cries and noises of other prisoners while they were being interrogated under torture." By the internal security force headed by, indeed, it was organizing and controlling that force that brought him to power, headed by Saddam Hussein himself. Because Sperling was a U.S. citizen at a time when the Iraqi government was looking to improve its relations with the United States, he was, as he himself stated, dealt with far more gently than others in his place of detention. The United States pressed the Iraqi government hard for access to Sperling. Before producing Sperling for his first meeting with U.S. diplomats, his Iraqi jailers gave him medical treatment for the wounds on his feet. At that meeting, he obeyed their order to say that he was being well treated. But at his second meeting with U.S. representatives, Sperling defied these warnings and revealed that he had been tortured. According to a U.S. official present at the meeting, Sperling's revelation caused Iraqi officials acute embarrassment. The United States immediately lodged vigorous diplomatic protests and demanded Sperling's release. After that, he was well treated. When released several weeks later, he was in relatively good shape, although scars on his feet were quite visible and were seen by U.S. diplomatic personnel in Baghdad. Sperling was examined by Amnesty International physician in Paris on October 25, 1983, 1 week after his release. Peter Wirth, a British civil engineer employed in Iraq, reported having been arrested, beaten, and tortured by electric shock in 1981. His reported offense was to have leaned against a wall at a construction project, accidentally causing a picture of Saddam Hussein to fall to the ground. Speaking of his ordeal, Wirth later said, quote, "I felt the electric shock go through my arm, then other parts of my body, including my private parts." Wirth said he signed a bogus confession to spying and was deported. I can go on with report after report. Hussein gave a speech. Am I boring you?
No, sir.
Nobody seems to understand the man. Let him speak for himself. Hussein gave a speech on September 24th, 1973, recorded in Public Affair, in which he was analyzing the situation of coups and troublesome governments that came to being, and contrasting Iraq and Cuba, which took imperialism by surprise, with Chile, where what he called concealed reserves of imperialism crushed the experiment. Now, here's Saddam's words. "We know that imperialism realized finally, and particularly in 1972, that the revolution in Iraq had gone past the state of the, quote, permitted revolution, which it was accustomed to see in the countries of the Third World. We have objective evidence," he says, "that imperialism was surprised by the many fundamental methods of the policy followed in this country. It had previously been surprised by several earlier experiences in Cuba, for example. However hard imperialism may now look for its concealed reserves in Iraq, it will never be able to compel our revolution to retreat and collapse. Some people may imagine that the revolution is unaware of what is happening around it. The revolution has its eyes wide open. Throughout all its stages, the revolution will remain capable of performing its role courageously and precisely without hesitation or panic once it takes action to crush the pockets of the counter-revolution. All that we hear and read about, including those crimes which have taken place recently, are new devices to confront the revolution and exhaust it psychologically. Those who have sold themselves to the foreigners will not escape punishment. Those who are committing these deeds are individuals," and on he starts into a tirade much like the one we heard against President Bush today. He explains the shooting of about 200 or 300 of his own officers that he was displeased with in the Iran war, which he participated in the shooting of some of them. And he was asked by the German magazine that interviewed him about it why he did it. He never even blinked. They didn't carry out their responsibilities as the leaders of our army. This man is not going to blink because he's crazy. This man thinks he's on a divine mission in his own warped viewpoint, just as surely as the Mameluke horsemen at the pyramids threw themselves against the superior might of Napoleon to be slaughtered in the sands of Egypt, sure that they would either win according to Allah's will or immediately be transported to paradise. This man isn't going to blink. This man is an evil force that cannot be treated as a rational being that can have a responsible, sharing role in civilized society. This man is a cancer virus that must be removed for civilization to continue to move forward with any kind of health. That's why our boys are in Iraq. They're going to get there real shortly. They're flying above it now. Nothing to do with oil. It has to do with that which civilization cannot allow to exist. I heard someone on a morning show saying, well, what about Indonesia doing this to some neighboring state? It didn't provide a threat to the whole civilization of the world. We're not sending planes. Neither are we doing surgical strikes on the streets of our major cities to remove gang warfare. You let it reach a stage where it threatens the whole city, the militia may be called out. I mean, there is both the definition of the evil and the threat that it genuinely imposes on the civilized world. Saddam is the same kind of threat to the civilized world that Hitler was. And journalism in the late 30s and early 40s, some a bit embarrassed because the same orchestrated devotion to Adolf Hitler paraded the streets of Germany that we see parading the streets of Baghdad. But eventually responsible journalism recognized there was an evil that could destroy civilization if it were not removed, that had an appetite that could not be contained by appeasement of any kind. And that is portrayed by the missiles he shot into Israel tonight. Now, I think the president needs to know there are people out there that do understand what the issue is, have bitten the bullet with him, and are proud that he did it. And you got to keep the letters going in so that in his quiet moments he can read something from real America, having been barraged with the media, who live in a celluloid world of hypocrisy and unreality. So get your pencils out and write letters. You say, I already wrote him. Well, write him every day. You know, while I'm getting airing my gripes about the media, you know, I really admire the women that are over in Saudi Arabia doing their part in the service too. And I'm a confessed chauvinist. I mean, if the term didn't exist, I'd invent it. And I have said for years and really meant it, really believed it, that I believe women are superior creatures. I really have believed that for many years. That doesn't mean I'm going to yield any ground to them. I mean, I'm smart enough and practical enough to know as long as we men are on top, we better damn well fight to stay there, because once we're off the mountain, we ain't ever going to get back, because they are superior creatures. So let them, by God, let them take the territory. I've said that over and over, haven't I?
Yes,
I've been very consistent all these years. I fear them. Feel just like a lion tamer when I'm in their midst, hoping that whatever I use as a substitute for the whip and the stool is going to intimidate them until I can get out of the cage. I mean, that's honest confession. And I have never been shaken in that belief until the last 2 days, as I've watched the women newscasters report on this war. And I'm telling you, you women ought to be ashamed, for the most part, of your representatives. They have done more to shake my faith in your superiority than anything I've encountered in the 61 years that I have lived. There's one or two exceptions, but most of them, it is very apparent they have not been hired for their womanhood. What I consider to be womanhood. They've been hired for those things that plastic surgeons can provide, and dental surgeons can provide, and makeup artists and hair artists can provide, and idiot cards can produce. I mean, you ought to really be ashamed. It just doesn't really come through when these women are reporting on this war and trying to give us an impression of their expertise and weaponry. I'm going to confess chauvinist, but I am embarrassed. And I'm warning you women, if this goes on, they could change my view. I mean, the only thing that's kept me in check is my recognition that women are superior. And if these news women casters keep going, they're going to delude me into believing you're not really superior. And then I may make the mistake of my whole life, the worst one I have ever made. So I think you ought to write letters to the newscasters, too, and the news directors, and tell them what hypocrites they are, and that we are waiting for someone. I keep trying to help you, Mike, until you'll look at your monitor and figure out that this camera can't center things. So I keep trying to move to get in the center of it, and you keep moving your camera, and I keep chasing myself all the way around. The way we're going, I'll be all the way around this room in a minute. Is that Mike, or have I got a woman running that camera? That was a newscaster. Look at your monitor over here, Mike. And at the same time, tell them, get those women off there when you write them. Or bring one home from the front line. Because they don't know what they're talking about. And most newscasters don't know what they're talking about. But these women newscasters have made it more obvious. I mean, you know, talk about surgical strikes. I got a couple of targets I could add to the battle plan. You never know whether I'm serious or not, do you? Well, I'm serious about that. I just think enough of women to be embarrassed for them. And some of these female newscasters that I've been watching try to report on this war. And where I really get mad is when they get a man that knows what he's talking about. There's one little old gal that's so full of herself that you can just see her hands tremble until she can interrupt him and hear her own voice. Salem was about to sit down to dinner when the knock came. The two men did not come in or identify themselves. They confirmed Salem's identity and politely told him to accompany them for a few questions. His wife asked too loudly whether anything was wrong. What was the problem? They hadn't done anything, and so on. Salem reassured her as though he knew all about it. He stepped outside with the men and gently pushed the door shut in her face. Salem remembered his hands turning clammy in the car, though it was not hot, and feeling his stomach had caved in on itself, although he was no longer hungry. The car stopped at the local AM headquarters. The organization founded by Saddam, among many. In the early 1970s, Baghdad was divided into security zones, the planning of which required citizens to sell their properties in certain areas at a price set by the government. I mean, since we were taking pot shots at South Africa, and we should have, how about this one being recognized for what it is, too? The headquarters of such zones were surveillance centers, routinely checking on movements within and between zones. You wonder why you can't find anybody in Baghdad that wants to criticize Saddam? Many a casual visitor to Baghdad has confirmed their surprising efficiency upon being questioned for taking snapshots of the Tigris at sunset or some other such offense. Cameras are sold in Iraq, but photography is suspect without the written authorization of the Ministry of Interior. Some of these centers in these zones are hooked to video cameras concealed on rooftops or built into statues and public monuments, probably in the urinals. The cameras cover the major roads, intersections, and roundabouts, forming a comprehensive network for each zone and enabling the center to monitor its area visually. Salem was escorted into such a building. Reading from Republic of Fear, The Politics of Modern Iran. He remembered waiting there for a long time, although still ignorant of the reasons for his being there. He was becoming more and more afraid. Eventually, he was ushered into an enormous office. Screen monitors dotted the entire space, and their flashing images impressed him more than anything else about the room. Whether they were there for effect or for function made little difference. Salem was offered tea and spoken to politely throughout. An important-looking man whose office this was and whose name he never found out looked at some papers before him and asked where he had been on a particular day many months ago. Salem didn't remember. He listed a few license plates, this man did, a few license plate numbers, only one of which Salem recognized as being his own. Dates and numbers were now being combined into a single question. And Salem was becoming so frightened he couldn't retain the different parts of each question, much less put them together into a coherent answer. Finally, he was caught out. The interrogator demanded to know how he could have been at work on that particular day if his car had been left at home. They knew he always drove to work. Now it dawned on him. Those were the weeks he'd been laid up with a leg fracture. When he was well enough to go to work, a cousin had picked him up in the mornings. The children were taken to school by someone else, and his wife had rearranged her schedule. These and other details could not tumble out of his mouth fast enough, and he caught himself saying nonsense. But he did not think the important-looking man noticed. To his astonishment, the explanation appeared acceptable. In fact, it seemed to come as no surprise. More questions followed, as though to pin down the matter. And then the interrogation was over. Relief color covered Salem's face until the bombshell struck. The important-looking man wanted Salem and his family to vacate their house within 10 days, clothes, furniture, and all. Salem was to drop his keys at another office in the building and register his new address. He would be contacted when his story had been checked out. Further questions and polite remonstrations were ruled out. The man's demeanor began to show irritation. Salem was escorted to the street and returned home. The house was vacated and the keys delivered. Months later, a telephone call came from Salem's local M headquarters informing him that he could collect his keys from the office where he had deposited them and return to his house. Not a single official piece of paper was preferred, or for that matter, asked for. Salem, having recovered from the mechanics of his tribulations, shoved the matter aside as one might the weather or a natural disaster of some kind, and pressed on with his otherwise perfectly mundane life. From the standpoint of ordinary citizens like Salem, the secret police rules in Iraq and is all-pervasive. The public perception of police omnipotence and omniscience is so much a part of their life that they never dare trust even members of their own family. We're dealing with a Hitler in a modern world with modern weapons that met his match. Thank God. It's not over till it's over. There will be casualties. But if there has ever been a cause worth dying for, this is it. Nabil Jamil Janabi. Back to this book, Saddam Hussein. As part of the same human rights report. And if I read the report from Amnesty International, torture, ill treatment, and death in Iraq, it's even worse. Nabil Jamil al-Janabi, an Iraqi poet living in exile in London, recently gave a public account of the torture he suffered at the security force headquarters in Baghdad after his arrest on March 1976, the same headquarters for the same people that gave to Saddam Hussein his power. He formed that force and used them to gain his power over the military, giving himself his military rank, not having been a soldier. Janabi, an Arab Iraqi, had read one of his poems to an assembly of Kurds at Sinjar in western Mosul province. For reading one of his poems to the Kurds, he was arrested and driven to Baghdad. Here's his report. I was taken by two very big gunmen into a single, cold, dark cell with no bedding. The door of the cell was opened at 3 a.m. They took me out, blindfolded, to an unknown place. They started torturing me by attaching one end of an electric wire to my left big toe and the other end to my penis. They put the power on and I lost consciousness for about an hour. Then they repeated this with the electric wire attached to my right foot. Again, I passed out. While I lay half dead on the floor, they tried to revive me by torturing me with cigarettes and steel rods. When I regained consciousness again, they tied my head and both legs together and put me into a tire. They started to spin it. Two men on either side kept spinning me round and round. In addition to all this, I was completely naked. They had taken off my pants. Then they started to beat me. Two men were beating me with electric rods hitting my testicles. Nabil al-Janabi, all for reading a poem to the Kurds that he had written. reported that he signed a piece of paper without knowing what was on it. Was sent to a revolutionary court where he was tried without the assistance of a defense minister, and was sentenced to 5 years in prison for publishing a poem, quote, calculated to incite people to act against the government, end quote. This is the nation led by the madman and the news media would report his demented speech on Baghdad radio and not offer any comments about the evil he personified, the nation he has created, his chief security man. As Saddam has a penchant for executing people with his own revolver to show his machoism, his chief security man used to gouge out the eyeballs of people he was interrogating with his lighted cigarettes. These are animals. We're talking about civilization endangered by evil personified and the media. Can't make the transition into choosing sides when they have an opportunity to present a moral issue to the world. Write them, tell them what you think. I have eloquent people who listen to me. Lay it on them and their bosses. Remind them of the transition that journalists had to make when the world confronted Adolf Hitler. Ask them if they want to have to face the videotapes in the years to come when this matter is over and hopefully another Nuremberg trial is held and the atrocities are revealed to the world of not having had the courage to take a stand on the proper side of the line, to use their language, that has been drawn in the sand. Of their sellout to ego and self-aggrandizement in front of a TV camera, while the freedom to do what they're doing is being protected by blood. Of the young men and women ready to die for these principles, in that sand of Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Iraq. I'm not too sure that the news media hears from decent Americans very often. So write them too. I want to call the people who listen to me to pray for victory, quick and complete. I'm tired of the gutless clergymen that pray for peace at any price. Pray, and when you write the president, tell him your pastor is calling for you to pray for the courage to finish the job and pray for victory. And the news media, out of the pit and mishmash of the slime, some true journalists will rise to the surface will take a side for civilization and common decency. The Palestinian question: if the Palestinians cannot recognize the evil that is Saddam Hussein, they shouldn't have a homeland. So blow them away with him. People who will use a Hitler to achieve their methods. And believe that that means can be justified by any end. Do not deserve any end that they are seeking, including they need to have their own end blown off. Them's my sentiments on this night of war. You write and say, this pastor's telling his people to quit praying for peace, pray for the courage to finish the job and victory for the peacemakers. And I seem to remember that Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers. This country's been hung up on peace for so long, they don't know how to stand for anything. Peace sometimes has to be made. Doing nothing is not peacemaking. And those are my sentiments. So go back to the telephone.